Hey guys, you're listening to the Fans of Wrestling show here in the FOW Radio Network. I am Patrick with Danny Danger and Mika Villas. The trio's back together again. How are you guys doing this evening?
The trio is back together. You know, it's February. It's been an odd week here in Georgia as far as warmer weather. Last week, you know, we had the Super Bowl in town and these kind of things. But now it's a little bit warmer weather. Kind of not sure what to make of it. But, you know, we're on the road to WrestleMania officially. And so many other things are going on in wrestling now. Can't wait to dive in.
Dive. It is, yeah, it is February. It is, of course, Black History Month. And, you know, I took a break a little bit, had to duck out and do some big game related things. But it's good to be back with my team, who are a bunch of super guys. And we're going to talk about what just bowls us over, and that's wrestling.
So much to talk about. Now, the first thing I want to kind of talk about is, because we didn't get to hear, Mika, from you about the Royal Rumble. So just real quick, give us your thoughts on the Royal Rumble winners, Seth Rollins and the man, Becky Lynch.
Seth Rollins, I believe, was one of my picks when I thought about the Rumble, the men's Rumble, I don't want to say the best part, but one of the most controversial parts was, of course, Nia Jax entering in at 30 after jumping R-Truth. I think that showed
one minute he was rocking, the next minute he was napping, okay? That's how he said it on SmackDown. But 1 minute I was rapping, the next minute I was napping.
But that showed a lot of gumption on WWE's part. We have not seen male-on-female violence in the WWE in, my gosh, 850 years. A lot of that has to do with advertising and who the company is now in the public face of the world. Plus, I believe that Canada had very strict laws about broadcasting male-on-female violence on television. So, of all places, Canada, but whatever. That was great. And of course, the big, huge thing was Becky Lynch losing her bid to become SmackDown Women's Champion, but entering in the Royal Rumble and winning the Women's Rumble. It was okay. It was solid. It was all right. I mean, nothing else, of course, stands out other than those two matches. I don't care about Seth Rollins in the title picture because he's always there. It's not special. I felt that perhaps maybe a Drew McIntyre or even that long-awaited huge, huge monster among men getting that opportunity would have been better. But, you know, I can only book the women's half of the WWE. I can't do it all.
Well, I mean, that's the way the Royal Rumble goes, unfortunately, is it's usually somebody who's already in the main event picture getting the title shot. You know, I can't recall, you know, in the last 10 or 15 years when somebody who was, you know, a relative mid-carder winning it and actually winning, you know, going on to WrestleMania. You know, so I think that's just the way it goes. It's going to be somebody who's already kind of an upper echelon player, you know, working to get their way into the main event.
Kind of sucks, but it is, like you said, it is what it is. It sucks because they talk about opportunity and Atlanta opportunity, but there's no opportunity unless you are already on a, you know.
Well, there was that moment, you know, where they kind of baited and switched us.
Also,
thought that Andrade and Dolph Ziggler were the last two guys in, and we're like, finally, it's going to be somebody different. So, you know, somebody's going to go up there, you know, and then, oh yeah, Braun's still in it. Oh crap. Okay. So Braun's probably winning it. Oh, Seth isn't going to the back. He's coming in and he's, you know, so he ends up winning it. But, yeah, so they gave us that moment of hope, similar to how they did several years ago and made us think that Santino Marella had won the Royal Rumble when he hadn't. Only to have Del Rio win it and main event by competing in the second match of the show. That's how he main evented the largest Royal Rumble at the time, a 40-man, fought Edge. I think it was either the first or the second match of the show, and that's because Edge was on his way out and they were concerned that, you know, he wouldn't be able to have as good a match or he might hurt himself or something. So they didn't put the match on the card.
So now, well, we got a little bit more clear on what's going on as far as the WrestleMania picture. So it's official. We have Brock Lesnar versus Seth Rollins. And we thought we had Ronda Rousey versus the man, Becky Lynch. But seems they're doing this injury angle with Becky, which is probably the way that they're gonna insert Charlotte. As much as we hate the idea of it, I mean, after 2 weeks, Charlotte continues to be in the middle of this. So I'm assuming here that we're going with the triple threat. So how exciting is to see the triple threat and including Charlotte in what should be a historic main event between the baddest woman on the planet and the man?
Yeah, I'm not excited about that at all. You guys at this point are well aware of my feelings towards Charlotte. It's unnecessary to throw an extra person in there. I mean, I'm also thinking that with this quote unquote injury angle, it reminds me of Daniel Bryan. You know, they were trying to keep him out of the main event, so he had to fight, you know, an additional match earlier in the card. So I'm thinking they could possibly do that to where rather than a triple threat, okay, you have to face, you know, Charlotte, or you have to face, you know, somebody else that Triple H selects, because it's apparent that the feud is with, you know, she's starting the feud now with Triple H and Stephanie. So they're going to potentially sabotage. So that's what it makes me think of when Daniel Bryan and they, oh, you can't be in the main event unless you beat, you know, Triple H. You got to beat me first and then you get in. So I'm wondering if they're going to do something like that. So Becky either has to fight somebody else, or maybe she fights Charlotte in a singles match, and then earlier in the night, and then the winner of that match goes on to face Ronda, so that it can still be a singles match. You know, and then of course Becky is even more disadvantaged if she's already wrestled in the night. So I'm kind of curious. I'm not really sure where they're going with it, but it's, and I get it. You don't want to have them, you know, just talk Becky and Ronda go back and forth and talk, and like, you have to do something in the meantime. It's quite a few weeks away. You know, you can't keep them away from each other for so long.
So, but you can. They're on two separate shows. I mean, Becky can show up, talk her smack. She can talk via satellite. I know how much they love doing stuff via satellite, but they don't actually have to touch. If they were on the same show, if this was the SmackDown Women's Champion versus, you know, the Royal Rumble winner.
Well, they don't, but what do you do with Becky and Ronda in the meantime? You're going to have to find midway feuds, because the fans are going to want to see Becky wrestle, okay? Especially if she's going to be on her different show. She can't just show up every week and cut a promo talking about Rousey. There's going to have to be a midway program. A lot of times with these things, they do like a midway program with the Royal Rumble winner, where somebody tries to, you know, I'm going to take your spot by beating you. You know, those kind of things. So they usually do a midway program with the winner. A small TV, made for TV program, or even one that results in a pay-per-view match at, you know, I guess we have two pay-per-views. Technically, we have Elimination Chamber and then, you know, Roadblock or Cockblock or...
Oh, Lord.
There you go. So we have that. So we have two pay-per-views that you're going to want Becky, you know, and possibly Ronda, I guess, wrestling on at least one of those shows each. So you need something. That's the biggest thing. And I guess this is what they're going with for the time being, to see how it goes.
I know that Charlotte should not be in this match. It is a disservice to Becky and to Ronda to add a third participant. Becky won the Royal Rumble fair and square, quote unquote, and she should be main eventing WrestleMania along with Ronda Rousey. This is the money match. Now, I know it is a long way away, like you said, but Becky can continue to be Becky and just lay waste to Ronda verbally via the social media platforms like she has been doing to this point, with not just Ronda or Ronnie, but everybody. Becky comments and challenges every person who dares tweet from a WWE standpoint. And while it may not be the action-paced, high adrenaline situation that people are used to, they want to see her wrestle, of course. But that entertainment portion with her just going after people on Twitter, that right there, I think would be enough to fuel promos and what have you, where she can just pop up at random or, again, via satellite and say things about Ronda in the match. And that would work like a soap opera. I mean, because this is a very elevated situation where we are not sure what they're going to do. If they insert Charlotte into the match, people are going to have to buy into it because people are going to be pissed the hell off, which means you talked about a, you know, a midway feud or what have you. I see Charlotte somehow getting on Raw, or perhaps Ronda feeling herself coming to SmackDown, and these two start going at it, and that might kick off a brawl that gets Charlotte inserted into the match. But again, other than being Ric Flair's baby girl, she did not earn her way into that match, and that's a problem.
Now, part of the rumor out there is that they do want to insert her in, partly because of all this talk about Ronda leaving WWE to start a family. And why put in this big match for someone on their way out? Of course, we know that it's been talked that she has a multi-year contract. So her leaving doesn't mean she's going to be gone forever. She can come in and out as it works out for her. WWE will use her whenever she is available. She does not have to be present all the time. I think that showing that she can work every week and be here full-time for this first year has allowed her to really show off how good she is. And, you know, there's still many money matches left. She can come back in any time. I think that is just a terrible reasoning as to why you should insert Charlotte, so Charlotte can get some of the benefit of that match because Ronda is leaving.
Well, Ronda's also, there was that rumor, you know, by somewhere, and then Ronda kind of came and said, she didn't really deny it, but she kind of made like, who are you to, why are people reporting on what my body wants to do and what my body's going to do? So she's, you know, kind of played it down without really flat out saying no. But, you know, there's always kind of rumors at, you know, after WrestleMania, who's coming back, who's not coming back. You know, we're still battling that rumor about Dean Ambrose not signing or signing. And, you know, so I don't, yeah, so it's difficult to know, you know, what's just in this day and age. And I think that's something WWE's playing with is what's, since kayfabe is, you know, they're trying to reblend what's real and what's not real. And so if the internet reports something, then they're going to play it down and say, oh, well, maybe it is, maybe it isn't, you know, try to keep fans who think they're in the know guessing. So I'm not convinced that anything that we hear on from a dirt sheet reported is fact until it actually happens, because also things change so frequently. So she may want to do this, but she may change her mind between now and then. There's a lot of time.
So moving on, we're talking about what's going on with some things in the WWE. The new Daniel Bryan is taking that character a whole other level. This past week on SmackDown, I mean, he's just I think that the way that he's doing this, you know, killing the Yes movement and, you know, going hardcore on, you know, to the extreme on some things that he sort of already believes in his personal life. It's really fascinating to me that he's able to take real life, his real life beliefs, bring him in into his character, and he's gone from probably the most beloved wrestler in the world to one of the most hated. And when he first turned heel, I really thought it was going to be hard for Daniel Bryan to truly get fans to hate him. But how good of a character has he been that he's been able to really turn the fans? Of course, it's helped that he's been, you know, feuding against AJ Styles, another crowd favorite. But now with the new championship belt and with Rowan by his side, he's just, to me, it's pretty awesome that he's been able to do this in such a short time. And this feud with AJ Styles, I thought would only last 2 or 3 months, has gone on now for maybe, what, 5 or 6? And it could continue going. Of course, now with the Elimination Chamber match, you know, you bring a few other faces to mix things up. But, you know, I'm really enjoying what we're seeing out of Daniel Bryan right now and really what he's been able to do with his character and evolve in a way where he can show a different side of himself and really bring out something outside of just the yes movement.
It's a lot of classic heel tactics he's combining, you know, with some of his personal beliefs and just kind of taking things into kind of a new era. But I mean, he knows that people want to cheer him. So he's doing so they're doing things that people don't want to see. Okay. He denied the fans multiple, you know, clean finishes to classic matches, you know, with the low blow to AJ, with Rowan coming in to assist. You know, it taints his victory. It ruins what the fans were thinking was an excellent back and forth contest. You know, he brings in somebody the fans have never really had that much affinity for, because the guy's always kind of been a tough guy, a follower. He's never really been somebody the fans like. And then, so you bring him in as his, you know, his bodyguard, his back muscle. And, you know, you bring in the new title that, although it has a distinct look, you know, you brag and boast about how it's better, and you toss the old one in the trash.
And you toss the old one in the trash. That right there.
Yeah.
You alienate new fans and old ones.
And then, I mean, he's speaking like a lot of great villains. He treats himself as though he's the hero. Okay, he's saving us when we don't want saving, and he's fighting the good fights, and he's standing up for things he believes in. You know, equal treatment of people, equal treatment of animals. You know, conservation, going against corporate greed. But because he does it like in such a manner where he's an asshole about it, he chastises and yells at people because they're not living life the way he sees they should be doing it. So he's fighting the good fight, and he's standing up for good causes and bringing light to them. But he's a pretentious asshole. He's a jerk about it. He's arrogant, and he looks down on the people who aren't living life the way he thinks people should live. And that is the biggest thing that's helped work and get him over as a heel. So many classic elements, but you bring them all together, you put a new spin on them, you know. And he's doing things that the fans don't want to see, you know, when he's a guy that they want to cheer. He's a guy they want to see wrestle because he is so immensely talented. So you have to work a little bit harder. You have to dig deeper into the playbook. And, you know, I mean, you mentioned the foil of AJ Styles, who's obviously one of the top fan favorites, you know, against him, and definitely helps. But I think it's just so much else, you know, so many other elements are coming in, and he's just knocking them all out of the park. It is very, very interesting to watch.
I think you said it perfectly. Basically, Daniel Bryan is being a jerky McJerkster. He's being that ultimate hippie douchebag who is telling you to recycle and to use compost and this, that, and the other. And he's being preachy about it, and people are not used to that. He is showing light upon people, and sometimes, you know, showing our own faults, and people don't like that. Something about Daniel Bryan resonates with people, whether he's good or bad. They're not cheering him. They're booing him because even though, like you said, he's fighting the good fight, we know we're wrong and we have to say boo you for pointing out our wrongness in us. Daniel Bryan is a fantastic competitor in the ring, but Daniel Bryan is an all-around great worker, much like AJ Styles, where people give them kudos about what they can do in the ring between the ropes. But to see those characters switch gears and become something totally different than what you were accustomed to, what you were used to, what you loved, now you get to hate, that is the mark of a true performer. And again, it's a swift and easy personality change, it seems like, for Daniel Bryan, which makes you think like, well, maybe he was a jerk all the time. We just never listened long enough and watched and paid attention. And that's another reason it works, because again, we're questioning so much about what he's doing and what he's saying and about what it says about us as fans and just as human beings. I mean, he's Captain Planet right now, but he's doing a great job. And yeah, the only, I guess, issue, and again, it was supposed to evoke a reaction that I have to the new Daniel Bryan, other than having to announce him as the new Daniel Bryan, was him tossing that championship belt away. That was like, wow, okay. There are things we don't do anymore, and that's one of them. So, you know, kudos to Vince for letting it happen and, you know, making it part of the story, but also, again, something for us to look at and look down upon Daniel Bryan for doing, because he, of all people, knows the rich history of the WWE championships and what have you, and how, you know, you don't throw championship belts away, man, or titles, I'm sorry.
Well, the funny thing I still think is, so, you know, long ago when, WCW, somebody threw away the belt, somebody threw away the hardcore belt, and then, like, Hacksaw dug it out of the trash. It's like, I'm the hardcore champion now. So people were making references to that, being like, did anybody check the trash cans, the venue to try to get that belt and claim themselves the champion, you know, as R-Truth or somebody, you know, is Jason Jordan floating back there and he's going to come back as WWE champion.
Samoa Joe's got AJ's kids, you know, because he went to visit AJ's, the Styles house. He's got one of the kids digging in the trash right now.
Yeah,
so Joe's
in the champion. Yeah.
Yeah. Kids bring the daddy Joe, and Joe's champ now. Thanks.
Yeah.
So looking at the women's tag team championship, which of course the winner of the tag team elimination chamber match will be the inaugural women's tag team champions. The field looks to have been set. We have Nia Jax and Tamina versus Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville, versus Liv Morgan and Sarah Logan, versus The Iconics, versus Bayley and Sasha Banks, versus Naomi and Carmella. Of course, we'll get into more details on our predictions here next week when we take a closer look at Elimination Chamber. But looking at this right now, any favorites here to become the inaugural women's tag team champion?
Well, I mean, most of the teams have, you know, kind of adopted team names and are trying to do things. I think Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville are Fire and Nice, or not Fire and Nice. What were they? They called themselves something like that. Fabulous Glow, I think, is what Carmella and Naomi went with, yeah, as far as their team name. It is kind of odd that there are four heel teams and only two babyface teams. So my, if my mind remembers history correctly, usually they have a babyface team win the first ever championship. The babyface may not hold the new title for long, but you want to do that feel good moment of the fans celebrating with babyface who's worked really hard to be the first ever. My guess and pick right out, pretty much once they started announcing this, is that it was going to be Boston Hug Connection of Sasha and Bayley. Is they're the ones who on TV have pushed for the women's tag belts. You know, they got together and started working more as a team instead of doing singles matches because they were hoping that they would get these tag belts. So I assume that it's Boston Hug Connection. And then, you know, maybe they lose them fairly quickly to the Riot Squad or somebody else. You know, maybe another team that's not even in the Elimination Chamber match right now. You know, another team catches them off guard. But I pretty much thought the way it seems that these belts were tailor-made for Boston Hug Connection.
If they're not color coordinating these belts, these girls' outfits, it's a damn shame because it is nothing but Bayley and Sasha being the first. I mean, other than a jumping bomb angels who might just come out of nowhere and, you know, pick up the belts they never got beaten for, but whatever.
Lost, yeah.
You know, I think it's interesting that they're going to be in the Elimination Chamber as far as the match goes. That's, yes, it's historic at the WWE's bringing back or creating, depending on how you look at history, the women's tag team titles. But I think it's even more so that these women get to compete in the Elimination Chamber. That is historic as far as a women's title match being determined in the chamber.
Well, it's a tag team championships, and I assume with the Elimination Chamber that it will be pretty much, you know, it's the chamber, and it's going to be tornado rules. It's not going to be tag teaming specifically, so it'll just kind of be more of a two-person team championships than initially being won under tag team rules, and that may also be where a heel team may try to say, we deserve a shot at these new champions because these are tag team belts and this wasn't technically a tag team match. Like they may use that
right
forward. But that was one of the things that stuck out to me.
The whole thing that stuck out to me was Sasha Banks is going to get a title, assuming we're right, which means she will lose the very next night on Raw because that's
That's her thing. Yeah.
So poor Bayley. You know,
Sasha's usually the other way around. Sasha would win it, you know, when her and Charlotte were feuding, she would win it on Raw and then lose it to. No, was it the other way around?
No, she went on the pay per view and lose it on Raw.
She went on the pay per view and then lose it on Raw. Okay, yeah, because So, unfortunately, Bayley might be on the bad end of that. You're right.
Yeah, Bayley's on the bad end of that. And I see the scary part is, I see them putting a title on Tamina and the other one because again, they're so enamored with Nia Jax.
Well, and Tamina to some extent, okay? How has Tamina been competing for so many years? I mean, we're looking at her being in WWE for nearly a decade at this point, right? Like, it's coming. It's
scary.
It's like 7 or 8 years, right? And she's still so bad, okay? Like, seeing her in the Rumble and seeing her in these matches, she's so flat-footed, she's out of place, she's just like awkwardly cumbersome, she just kind of stands around and like waits for other people to do moves to her. Like, she's just so bad, but she's been doing it so long, and they keep her and they continue to try to find ways to use her, you know, have her as, you know, she kind of has this regular recurring role as the tough girl backup muscle for somebody, you know? And then that sometimes leads to her getting in ring action. But usually it's just her standing at ringside in a leather jacket.
I feel like she spent a lot of her career injured while she was employed by the WWE. Her actual in-ring time out of the, like, call it 7 or 8 years is probably like a year and a half. I think she spent the rest of her time injured.
Well, that too, but I'm saying, like, she's been employed and competed at the highest level of the industry for so long, and she's still just so bad, and they still just keep trying to use her and trying to do things with her, you know? That's the biggest shocker to me is, you know, oh, she is still there. She still does have a job. Why? And why is she being trying to push her into TV time and into a top angle? She doesn't have a lot of redeeming qualities. Even her last name now is tainted because of her father. So, like, you can't sit here and say, oh, she's a legacy. It's important to have her as a legacy, because the name Snuka is tainted because of all the stuff that happened towards the end of her father's life, where he was, you know, deemed unfit to stand trial for a murder that could have happened 25 years ago. Dementia had taken over so much. Like, so you can't even say, oh, well, the name Snuka holds value, because the name Snuka doesn't. It's, you know, it's a buzz name. It's something that it's like, that's why they just call her Tamina. That's why she's not Tamina Snuka.
Remember, in the WWE, though, they write their own history.
Well, they do, but you can't, there's certain things that you can't unwrite. Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, they, but that's what I'm saying, is that that's would seemingly be her redeeming quality, is that she is a second generation female wrestler. But you don't want to acknowledge the first generation now.
Vince doesn't have to acknowledge it. He just has to recognize it. And he would want somebody to at least exploit his kids if the shoe's on the other foot.
Look, she's somewhat related to The Rock, and that's all that matters to Vince.
That's, well, yeah.
I was going to go there, too. That, you know, that's Samoan heritage. Those bloodlines run strong. They run back to Dwayne.
I think Samoa Joe's like the only Samoan wrestler that's not related to The Rock. That they never said is like directly related to him. I think Samoa Joe's like from the far end, like from the other side of Samoa. Like, he's the wrong side of the track.
Or more like the good kind.
The good side of the tracks, yeah. There's like the Inouye family, and then there's like, and that's like the majority of the island, and there's like Joe and his family.
Yeah, I'm with you guys. Bailey and Sasha are definitely gonna be the favorites. Now, if you guys could, though, pick any tag team from the entire WWE roster, we're talking WWE, NXT, UK, what other tag teams would you have liked to have seen be added to this match?
If you don't say the Sky Pirates, then something's wrong with them, okay? That's the other women's team right now. That's the fucking women's team. Kairi and Io are outstanding and amazing, and you know, as soon as they get to the main roster, I assume they're keeping them as the Sky Pirates, the team, instead of pushing them as single stars. They're coming, as soon as they get up on the Raw or SmackDown, they're coming for those belts. So they would be the only other team that I would want to see in there, and win the whole damn thing.
I guess if I had to pick just in the WWE and the current ish roster, I would throw Chelsea Green in there, and it doesn't matter who her partner is. She's got a dual personality, so she could win the tag team titles by herself and just kind of go for it. Honorable mention to the beautiful people. I'm talking Madison Rayne and Velvet Sky. I know they're not on the roster or anything, but you've got some tag team belts. Those are my girls, real teams. Excuse you.
Good in the ring. They were never good in the ring.
Hey, listen. You don't have to be good to be beautiful, okay? Thank you.
They weren't even that hot.
Okay. Hey, I like you, but I will shake my fist at you, sir.
I would have liked to see Dakota Kai and Tegan Nox be there, and they probably would have been considered, except for both women are now currently injured, which sucks. But I think that they would have been a really fun tag team. I mean, they were very enjoyable to watch on NXT the few times they did tag together. So they get an honorable mention because I think that they showed promise that we're heading that way. And, of course, unfortunately, injuries derailed those plans, which sucks. But what can you do?
Are you tired of the same old pro wrestling? Then check out the amazing action on Powerslam.tv, the biggest indie pro wrestling channel in the world. Get over 4,000 hours of the best pro wrestling events from over 110 of the biggest names in the industry from over 15 countries around the globe. Get your free trial today at Powerslam.tv.
All right, so Moving on. Let's get away from WWE for a minute. We last weekend got to go to a wrestling show where we were able to be just fans, you know, for once, not being doing some type of role.
Yeah, not any combination of us. We were all free, just able to hang out and watch the show. That's the rarity.
So it was Come Hell or High Water from a promoter from Texas that put on the show. He had put a show at a bar on Thursday night with Ken Shamrock versus Tom Lawler being the headline act. And Mika had the pleasure of going to that show, which she tells me was very entertaining. It's available on Fight TV for anyone that missed it. But Come Hell or High Water, we got to see a lot of cool matches. Of course, that show, headlined by the Lucha Brothers versus SoCal Uncensored. Of course, that being Christopher Daniels and Frankie Kazarian. Lucha Brothers, Pentagon Jr., and Rey Fénix. We did get to see a cameo from Cody Rhodes with Faro. And the Young Bucks at the end came out and offered a handshake deal to the Lucha Brothers to wrestle in AEW. Of course, can't really give them a contract given their contract situation with Lucha Underground / AAA or CML, whoever they're tied to at this moment. But yeah, with Lucha Underground being the bigger question mark. So with that said, a handshake agreement, which could possibly see the Lucha Brothers in action in AEW, but without a actual contract, which that being very different from everything else happening in AEW. But how did you guys enjoy the show? I thought that people were definitely happy with it, and the promoter definitely was, because apparently they're planning on going to the Super Bowl weekend in Miami next year.
Yeah, no, I really enjoyed the show. I mean, there were a lot of great... I mean, it was a very, very, very stacked card as far as independent names there. You know, of course, you had... I mean, you already mentioned the Lucha Brothers and SoCal Uncensored. So we had all three of SoCal Uncensored. We had the Lucha Brothers. Mil Muertes was there. Matt Cross was there. Thunder Rosa, Eli Everfly, and Delilah Doom were there. Penelope Ford was there. Joey Janela was there hanging out and making appearances. Of course, he's still on the injured reserve list himself. Ken Shamrock also wrestled the show. Tom Lawler wrestled on the show. Oh, goodness gracious. Joey Ryan, Effie, Chris Wolf, Alley Cat. Just piles and piles of people from all across the independent world. A lot of interesting, fun matchups. Of course, then you had, you know, at some point in time, Cody and Hangman Page come out to save Joey Ryan. That's kind of the gimmick, is Joey Ryan gets in trouble and the Elite come out and save him. And then after the tag match, the Young Bucks come out. You know, so it was a whole lot of wacky stuff. You know, we even got to see Glacier and the Yeti compete as well. Very, very, very unusual but entertaining night of wrestling. Yet again, like I said, we got to, the three of us sit there as fans. Usually it's at these shows, at least one of us is doing some kind of work, but we all got to sit there and kind of hang out and have some drinks and have some fun. I really enjoyed the show. You know, it was a lot of fun, a lot of wacky stuff. You got to see some of the best in, you know, best wrestlers in the country there, all in one place for essentially, you know, for a one night off kind of show.
It was an amazing weekend. I did go to both shows that the promotion put on. First show that Thursday, only four matches, but a no ring bar brawl was amazingly crazy. Everything you think it could be. And then the next night, to see Rey Fénix like dive out of the ring into the 18th row was like crazy. Seeing Cody, the Bucks, and just a host, a who's who of indie wrestling's, no pun intended, elite. And for us, again, to kind of sit back and just, you know, we I think we had a ball being fans again, not having to do, you know, the typical things. We have fun during shows, but we were able to sit back and relax and I think take in a whole lot more as fans and just, again, reveling at the craziness that is indie wrestling. There was, you know, brawls all out of the ring, all through the crowd. There was beer spilled, tables broken, merchandise thrown about. Again, Rey Fénix, Jesus. I don't even know how to describe it. There's video on Twitter and on Fight TV. You definitely want to, you know, go ahead and subscribe, pay for that show because it is well worth the subscription fee in its own right. And yeah, next year, Miami. 2020 in Miami for the Super Bowl weekend. There is talk about doing it again and bringing in even more names. So I'm definitely down for that. If they do another no ring bar brawl, I'm like, hey, let's go. I'll be there with beer in hand. So excited.
Now, what do you guys make up of what's going on with All Elite Wrestling? Apparently, while in Atlanta, Cody and the Bucks had conversations with TV stations, being that there's definitely lots of money behind this, trying to get a TV deal is important. You want to maximize, you know, the opportunity that you have with AEW, because you know, you want to make as much money as possible from the get-go, because I think like quarterly or annually doing shows is not enough. You know, you have a contract with these guys, which means exclusivity. I think MLW has pretty much set a standard of what contracted wrestlers on a TV show really means when you're in a small independent company, because MLW runs very much every month now, and they provide their contracted wrestlers with plenty of work, with, you know, all these shows that they're doing now nationwide, and of course they're on TV. On Access, and shows also get uploaded on YouTube. So definitely right there, it's a formula that's working. MLW continues to grow. So now we see AEW, of course, Cody and the Bucks right now being, you know, some of the hottest acts in the business. What do you guys make of what the roster's looking like now? And of course, the recent addition, none other than Jimmy Havoc.
I'm really intrigued to see what they're able to make out of this and what they do. They're excellent at promoting it, at hyping it, you know, going around to these different wrestling independent shows, you know, still doing the episodes of Being the Elite. And now Cody has his own, you know, YouTube series he started as well, you know, about AEW, kind of a behind the scenes of them talking to wrestlers and trying to contact things and put the deals together. They're great at hyping it. And, you know, I mean, a lot of fans are, you know, oh man, WWE is going to, you know, going to need to watch out for these guys. And you know, they're going to bring down WWE and all this. And that's being quite ambitious. Okay. They haven't even run a show yet. You know, give it some time, see where things go. But I am really interested and excited to see, you know, they're starting to collect a very interesting group of talent. You know, I mean, Chris Jericho and Bastion Pac, and of course, you know, the core of the Elite themselves, but then you add Jimmy Havoc and the Lucha Bros kind of as a, you know, with their handshake deal, makes for, I mean, so far just a very interesting talent pool. Of course, you know, when you're in Atlanta and you're talking television, the first name that comes to everybody's mind is Turner. So the assumption was that they were all, you know, they attended the Super Bowl. They posted pictures of some of them, you know, going to the Super Bowl. But, you know, the of course, talk would be that they were at Turner offices talking about a television deal with one of the Turner networks, you know, which, of course, could be TBS, TNT. You know, I mean, heck, they could be on True TV or, you know, even on the Cartoon Network in an animated form. Who knows? But they, so that's, I mean, there are other television people that may have been in town. Especially with the Super Bowl being there in town as well. But that's, of course, the first name that everybody says. Oh, they were here about talking, try to get it on TBS, you know, try to get into that Turner, you know, see if Turner wants to come back into wrestling. We'll see. And yet again, I'm very interested to see and follow the journey and see what all they're able to do. But yeah, if they want to be successful, if they want to do this well, they're going to have to do more than, you know, one big show every few months. They're going to have to do something, you know, do some kind of tapings or get on some kind of regular touring schedule to have a real impact on professional wrestling the way they're talking about wanting to do. So maybe Turner's the way to go. Maybe it's not. We'll see as the AEW adventure continues.
More than a t-shirt shop and the buzz. If nothing else, they have that buzz. They have that that drive, adrenaline, that fueling of wrestling fans' imagination. And I think that's where that's going to be their bread and butter until they get shows booked, until they get something out there. Having these names join them, so to speak, is great. Because it, again, it bridges, I think, a gap and makes wrestling fans, especially this internet-based wrestling fans, more hungry for more and just hanging on their every word. And that's what they need. They need to show advertisers and sponsors and, of course, television that we have the fan base. We just need your, you know, your station, your time, your money to help put this out there. And, you know, they never said they wanted to take down Vince. All they have is they want to take over the world. And that doesn't necessarily mean taking over the WWE. It's just doing what they do best or what they think they do best, which is putting on a great indie-rific show.
They want to change the world and they want to be an alternative. You know, and who really suffers the most out of this? No, it's hard to say. I mean, do other independent wrestling promotions take a back seat? I mean, we see what Ring of Honor has done. You know, not a bad thing, but they've picked up wrestlers under contract, which means they can't be in the, you know, on the indies. Now, is AEW gonna run so often that they need all their talent to themselves? Having somebody like a Joey Janela who right now, he could sell ice to an Eskimo, the way that that Joey Janela Spring Break does, and you know, and why GCW is so smart to attach Joey's name to, you know, some of their biggest shows, like they did it in New York and they did in L.A. And of course, Spring Break is pretty much the only show from WrestleMania weekend that is sold out. And they sold that in minutes. That's crazy right there. You can't keep a guy like that exclusive. So it's interesting to see what exactly it means for the talent, and what exactly does it mean for promotions that may want to use these guys in the future. But definitely an alternative to Ring of Honor, to Impact Wrestling, I'll even say, you know, MLW, since they have a TV deal. And, of course, a few of these guys who are now with AEW are guys who were under contract with MLW. So MLW losing some of these talents. So we'll definitely see what comes of it. So lastly, this weekend coming up, there's three great shows that will be happening. First, Action will have a double shot. They will have a special 3 p.m. show at the Action Zone. And then they will have their Friday night show at 7:30 p.m., which will be headlined by AC Mack versus Cam Carter for the Action Championship. Then the next day in the Scenic City, Making Town Wrestling will present February Fracas, and followed by Scenic City Invitational's Scenic City Rumble. Of course, that my favorite gimmick match, the Royal Rumble match, 30 man with the winner getting a not only a spot in the 2019 Scenic City Invitational, but will also choose their first round opponent. And a special match as well there, feature match between Joey Lynch and Anthony Henry, which pretty much, you know, has a show stealer there written all over it. Of course, a rematch from their first round match at the 2016 Scenic City Invitational. Any matches in particular, anything out in those shows that kind of stands out to you guys?
I mean, just Scenic City Rumble, knowing the possible talent pool, I think helps make that even more exciting as to who's going to be in it. You know, I mean, at this point, you know, the Scenic City shows have been running for a couple of years. You kind of have an idea of some of the types of people that they like to use, you know, some of the regular talent. Okay, maybe this guy will be there, but it's still the independent scene. Nobody's signed, and, you know, very few people are signed to contracts. So realistically, who could show up, I think, is part of the exciting thing. You know, there's that factor of true surprises of people possible popping in that help make that match a little extra fun.
True. I'm looking forward to the Action show, the Make-A-Wish at 3 p.m. that I've been talking to a couple people there that are going to be there to show their support. 3 p.m. is a wish granting, so anybody who can come out, Tyrone, Georgia, the Tyrone is right behind the public library there. And it's going to be awesome. I mean, I've done some charity work in my time, but Make-A-Wish is like huge. If you guys watch wrestling, you know, John Cena does so many he's like the most, I don't want to say over, but he's done the most granting of wishes for any celebrity. And here's just a little something that Action Team has put together to try to grant the wish of a young man who, you know, wants to be in wrestling. So I think that's just so very special. I'm looking forward to that. There's going to be great action on the card. There are action later that evening, but I think the highlight is going to be for me personally, watching that wish get granted. Scenic City is amazing every year. Making Towns is going to be out of this world. All female card. Of course, women's wrestling is at an apex right now, and we've seen a lot of great wrestling come out of Making Towns Classic, and this Making Towns February Fracas, I am sure, will follow suit. If you can't get to Chattanooga for some ungodly reason, I don't know, it's not far from Atlanta, there's also Viral Pro running that same day in Thompson, Georgia. They've got a stack card as well. So there's wrestling in and around Atlanta, Chattanooga, Georgia, Augusta, I mean, you name it, there's wrestling somewhere. So I wish I could be everywhere at once, but I can't. So we'll see where I wind up. And everybody needs to go out to a show someplace near them.
Yeah, so you don't know where you will find us next, what show we will show up on, but you know where you can hear us pretty much every week, and that's here on the Fans of Wrestling show on the FOW Radio Network. So make sure that you subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, TuneIn, Google Play, anywhere where podcasts can be heard. So also make sure you follow us on the Twitter machine at FOW Radio. Danny's on Twitter at Danny F in Danger. Mika's on Twitter at Mika Villas. I'm on Twitter at YellowmanPA. That is the show for tonight. Thanks for listening. And as always, keep watching wrestling.